This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence. Helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Welcome to the Migration Podcast, your guide for waterfowl hunting tactics, gear, and conservation. And now, your host, Brian Hallblind.
What is up, everybody? As Johnny M. said, I am your host, Brian Hallblind. I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to tune in to the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. Thank you so much. This episode is brought to you by The Duck Hole and Company, attracting feathers together. They are a full-service habitat company located in North Carolina. If you have questions about waterfowl habitat or need some work done on your property, contact them through any of their social media platforms at The Duck Hole Company. They can also fix you up with Golden Millet, the Duck Buffet, and the best bang for your duck. I hope you are all doing well out there. I'm doing just fine here in Southwest Pennsylvania. It's a little warmer than I like for this time of year, but I'm not going to complain. I think it got up in the mid-80s today. No rain, but beautiful evening out there. Hoping for a little more of a spring. We've had some decent spring days, but not a whole lot of them. But I'm definitely not going to complain about 80s and sunshine. So I'm hopping on here a few days earlier than the launch, which will be Thursday morning as you're listening to this. I wanted to let you know that we started a new video companion series to our audio podcast. They're going to be some video blog type episodes, and we're going to call it Migration Monday. They'll be launched every Monday on our YouTube channel, so we can bring you more content every week and earlier than the audio podcast that launch every Thursday. These will be more timely, and I'll get to share more real-time content as opposed to the audio show that we usually record ahead of time and launch much later on the calendar. So time is flying as usual. When this launches, it's going to be right at the precipice of Memorial Day weekend, which is really hard to believe. Mentioned having that boat project that I've been wanting to work on. Haven't got as far along with that as I'd wanted to. Memorial Day usually marks the time frame when the carp start spawning in western Pennsylvania. And I was hoping to have that ready for bow fishing season. Doesn't look like that's going to happen, but we'll see. It's supposed to be nice the next few nights here. But you guys all know how it goes out there. You've got a bunch of projects around the house when you have a nice stretch of weather. We're getting our deck ready and our deck furniture cleaned and ready for the summertime. And hopefully we'll get all this wrapped up, put a fresh coat of stain on the deck, and we'll be able to enjoy our deck and bring on the welcome the summer in this weekend. So I got my daughter who graduated from college last weekend. She's back home. My youngest finished her first year of college. She's also back home. So it's been really nice to fill that empty nest up for a little while again. I really miss them when they're gone, but really proud of the young women that they're becoming and the sacrifices and the hard work that they're putting into their careers. So it's going to be a short summer for my oldest. As I mentioned before, she's going to be starting medical school. It comes around real quick towards the end of July. She's going to have to move back up to her apartment and start medical school. So we're going to try to cram as much fun as we can into the time that we have. We're going to get our family vacation in and just try to do as much as we can together as a family while they're both home. The Pennsylvania 2024-25 migratory game bird seasons have been set. There's one significant change to Pennsylvania waterfowl seasons this year. The regular season length for Canada geese in the Atlantic population zone has decreased from 45 to 30 days, but the daily bag limit remains 3. They quoted a Game Commission biologist who said the population recently falling just below the threshold for a liberal season, the harvest strategy mandates a shorter hunting season for this population. In addition, hunter preference resulted in small changes to the Lake Erie and Northwest Duck Zone seasons. In the Lake Erie Duck Zone, the portion of the season with a two-bird daily scalp bag limit will be the last 20 days of the season, rather than the first 20 days. The Northwest Duck Zone season saw a week shift from the October-November segment into the December-January segment, which also results in the junior, veteran, and active duty military day for this zone shifting from December to late September. So it looks like the majority of the state for duck hunting will be opening October 12th. The North Zone split will be October 12th to the 26th, and then comes back in November 19th through January 11th. The South Zone will be October 12th through the 19th, with the split coming November 19th through January 18th. That's going to be hopefully fairly significant, because that getting into the third week of January there, that should help in case we get these milder winters continuing. Hopefully that'll help get us into some colder temperatures with that stretching out to January 18th. The Northwest Zone is October 12th through November 29th, and then splits from January 23rd to January 11th. The Lake Erie Zone doesn't come in until November 4th, and that runs through January 11th. Total duck bag limit, 6 daily, 18 in possession of any species except for the following restrictions. Daily limit may not include more than 4 mallards, including no more than 2 hen mallards, 2 black ducks, 3 wood ducks, 2 redheads, 2 canvasback, 1 pintail, 4 sea ducks, including no more than 3 eiders and no more than 1 female eider, 3 long-tailed ducks, and 3 scoters. And then there's some daily limits for scalp. I'm not going to get into all that. The resident population goose zone for Canada geese includes white-fronted geese, all of Pennsylvania except for the Atlantic population zone, September 2nd through the 25th, with an 8 goose daily bag limit, October 26th through November 29th, December 16th through January 18th, and January 31st through February 22nd. Has a 5 goose daily bag limit in the latter 3 segments that I just mentioned. The Atlantic population zone is going to be September 2nd through the 25th with an 8 goose daily bag limit, November 23rd through the 29th, and December 23rd through January 18th will have a 3 goose daily bag limit. So having that shift in the veteran and active duty military days, shifting it back into September, I'll be able to hunt the Northwest Zone on September 28th, which was pretty cool. You don't normally get to hunt ducks in Pennsylvania in September unless you're a junior hunter. But I'm definitely going to try to take advantage of that for sure. So that's basically it for the Pennsylvania migratory bird seasons. Obviously, there's a lot more birds included in that. I didn't want to bore anybody to death that's not listening from Pennsylvania. So I didn't go into the details, but you obviously know where you can find all that if you need to get any more information on any of the other birds. I'm going to be definitely taking advantage of the early teal seasons out of state, like I mentioned before. I think the better spots in Ohio, that opens September 1st, I believe. Probably 3 hours from my home, maybe 4. It's probably about the same for Maryland to get into some good teal hunting. So within 3 to 4 hours, I can head west or east. I think Maryland opens up later on in September, so I can give Ohio a shot and see how things go. I'll make it down to Maryland. I've got some plans to head out to Nebraska and Kansas for both of those early teal seasons in September. I'll probably, it's quite a drive from my house. I forget what I looked at. It's 15 hours. I did hunt deer out there a few years back in 2020, I believe. Not a bad drive, but I'm the type of person that doesn't mind driving at all. So I can get in my car and, or in my truck, I should say, and drive across the country, and doesn't really bother me. I actually enjoy it. So, but making that long of a drive, it didn't make sense just to hunt a couple of days. So I'm going to try to hunt at least 3 days in Nebraska and 3 days in Kansas. So I'll be bringing that all to you through the podcast, and I'm going to try to film as much of it as I can for the YouTube channel. And just looking forward to getting in as much time as I can this year. Priorities have kind of changed, kind of shifted. As I mentioned a bunch of times, most of my outdoor media work has been in the whitetail deer space, and I've kind of used most of my vacation and free time and resources to spend as much time deer hunting as I can. And now that I have this opportunity, I'm going to try to put in as many days of waterfowl hunting that I've ever done in a single season. So I'll be putting that North American Waterfowler app to work for sure this season. I mentioned it a little bit on Migration Monday on the YouTube channel. If you're not familiar with the North American Waterfowler, it's a podcast put on by Elliot Schneider. He's got, he's over 100 episodes. I know he crushed it in the last 12 to 14 months since he launched back in early 2023. But he's got about 8 or 9 seasons of the Freelance Duck Hunting channel on YouTube. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with that. If you're not, be sure to check out both that podcast and his YouTube channel. Lots of great information, lots of good entertainment over there. And now this North American Waterfowler app that he has, you can track all kinds of stuff from your individual hunts, your shooting percentages, your lifetime stats. You can add your crews and keep track of your hunting crews and the percentages amongst the groups. There's some tips on there, some videos. There's even a kind of like a message board. I'm forgetting a bunch of stuff, I'm sure, but kind of takes out the guesswork of, you know, where to keep your stats. You know, you don't have to carry a notebook around. You don't have to make spreadsheets. It has everything kind of contained just in this single app. So I'm really looking forward to testing this out for myself this season. Been hearing a lot of great things about it and just messing with it here in the off season since I downloaded it. I can see it's going to be a very valuable tool. So check that out for sure. Well, I've rambled on quite a bit here for this intro. I really appreciate you guys jumping on and giving me the opportunity to speak to you. I know I probably say that over and over again, but I truly do. I'm really enjoying putting this content out and recording these episodes with these interesting guests and meeting new people and opening up new friendships and new doors to some new journeys that I'll be making around the country this year. And just really, really appreciate it. So let's get into today's episode. Branson and I are going to be talking with Bill Ayer. Bill is the owner of Slayer Calls out of Idaho. Bill grew up waterfowl hunting with friends in the Sacramento Valley in California. We discuss his progression and growth as a waterfowl hunter. We also talk about how he ended up in Idaho after growing up in California. how Idaho waterfowl hunting differs from California, and what species and habitats and habitat types that they focus on. We also chat about how he got into building waterfowl calls, his love and family heritage of working with his hands and turning wood, and what his early days of call building look like. We get into the different calls he offers. We talk about how to choose a call, some calling tips, and Slayer calls Call the Wild how-to call instructional videos. Bill has been waterfowl hunting and building calls for many years. I really enjoyed our chat, and I think you will as well. So let's jump into episode number 4. Welcome back to another episode of the Migration Waterfowl Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Hallbly. Thank you for joining us today. I've got my co-host, Branson Peake, here with me. How's it going today?
Not bad. Pretty cold.
Yeah, crazy weather we're having here in PA, as usual.
Yep, end of April, 30 degrees. Next weekend, 80 degrees.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, man, it's crazy weather, and we're here in April, but going to be talking some duck hunting with a great guest, so looking forward to that.
Absolutely.
We got Bill from Slayer Calls on the line. Bill, how's it going today?
Going good. Thanks for having me. Sitting here thinking about when duck season is going to be rolling back on.
Yeah, we're not too far out. We got some early teal seasons coming up in September, so just a handful of months, it'll be here before we know it for sure.
Yeah, it always comes faster than you think.
No question.
Yeah, kind of a, besides the turkeys, it's kind of a dead time of year.
Right. So, Bill, if you don't mind, can you tell us who you are, where you're from, and what you do for a living?
Yeah, so I'm full-time Slayer Calls. We build waterfowl calls, elk calls, predator calls, and turkey calls. So I spend all year thinking about new calls to manufacture and keeping our manufacturing process and all the calls coming out with the quality that we expect.
Very nice. So what's your main bulk of your business as far as calls goes, as far as species?
Yeah, I would say it's we probably sell 60-70% more waterfowl than we do elk and the other calls. So I'd say waterfowl is probably our main bread and butter as far as the number of calls that we send out. Elk, we're starting to grow, turkey also, but waterfowl seems to be, where it's at.
How'd you get into waterfowl hunting?
Oh, gosh, that started back when I was probably 10 years old. A buddy of mine took me out. My dad wasn't much of a duck hunter. He'd let me shoot coots when we were out pheasant hunting and whatnot, but he grew up duck hunting, but kind of got out of it. So I had a buddy who his family were big time waterfowl hunters out where I grew up in the Delta, out in California in the Sacramento Valley. And he took me out, and I was always pheasant hunting, quail hunting with my dad, and used to trail around behind them deer hunting and whatnot. But so I get out on that duck blind, and out there in the Delta, it's pretty big water. So what they do is they spend all summer, all spring out there building their blinds and whatnot. And so, you drive into these blinds, pull the boat up underneath, climb up on top, and you're hunting, big tule type ponds and whatnot out in the Delta. And that was my first experience. So just the boat ride, the blind, how it was made, the amount of time they put into it, the craftsmanship, it was pretty cool. But then I watched my buddy's brother's call duct and watched him just pour down into this pond exactly how they had set it up. And that was my first introduction to waterfowl hunting. And from that day on, I just remember sitting there watching those mallards just cupped up, just come in. And from that day on, I was like, I'm going to be a duck hunter. I remember saying that in my head. And and then I got the opportunity to watch some good dogs run. And then the same thing, it was like, okay, I'm going to get a dog. I'm going to make it a good dog. And it just, how duck hunting progresses, right? And then you're like, then you get a boat experience, and all of a sudden you're buying a boat and you're buying more decoys.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
But that's, I mean, it just progressed that way, right? And then, where, you know, I have my own boat, I was building my own blinds out in the Delta, and then, you know, just progressed there into field hunting, flooded rice and all that good stuff.
So how did you make the move to where you're at now? You're in Idaho, right?
Yep. Yeah, about 10 years ago, my oldest stepdaughter, she went and played basketball out in Wyoming, then ended up transferring to BSU. And both the girls went to BSU, and they're like, hey, we're staying here. We're not going back to California. And then my oldest had a little baby. So my wife's like, hey, you want to move to Idaho? I'm like, oh, you don't have to twist my arm. Let's go right now. So, yeah, it was a good move. And I've been coming up here with my dad for, gosh, almost 30 years elk hunting. So we'd make the 12 and a half hour drive every year and spend a week up here elk hunting. So I was pretty familiar with it already.
Okay. So do you still go back to the Delta, the duck hunt, or did you kind of pick up some new spots in Idaho to waterfowl hunt?
We found a lot of spots here in Idaho, so I don't go back there too often to do any duck hunting. I'll do some field hunts for geese, like specks, or I really like speck hunting. So we don't get a real good speck flight here in Idaho until springtime. So if I get an opportunity, I'll go back and do some speck hunting.
Okay. So what's the waterfowl hunting look like in Idaho? What are you guys targeting there?
It's terrible. If I was anybody, I wouldn't come here to duck hunt at all. So, okay. Well, no, I think Idaho is a little hidden secret. It's pretty darn good. All we shoot for the most part is big fat greenheads. And, you know, you get some till early season, some widgeon stick around here, but it's almost 100% just fat greenheads. So,
okay.
You know, we got a lot to offer as far as, you know, small water, like ditches and things like that, next to grain fields. And then we got big rivers, and then we got lakes, and then also a lot of field hunting. So, it's not the numbers. It's not the migration like you get in the central migration, you know, migration path, or the west Pacific migration. You know, where I grew up in Sacramento Valley, I think it was 1.6 million waterfowl winter down there.
Wow.
Whereas here it's, you know, maybe 100,000, a couple hundred thousand birds. But you know, you just don't have the numbers of people hunting them either. So,
sure.
It's not too bad.
So you kind of concentrating on the potholes until they freeze up, and then you hit the rivers.
Yep. That's what you do. The rivers really don't get good until it freezes up. It moves all the, you know, the birds off that small water that they can find and get pretty dispersed. But now when it gets cold, it gets good.
All right. So call makers always fascinate me, you know, like building from scratch. So like, how'd you get into building calls? You know, I always like to ask that question to, you know, like,
yeah,
people make them that I meet. So
yeah, it's a long story, but I'll keep it short. But you know, I always had a passion. Well, first of all, I'll start with my passion, but you know, I've always had a passion for working with my hands, or trying to work, you know, do something with my hands. My uncle was a cobbler. My grandfather made custom furniture for a living. My dad was an iron worker. So, I mean, these are guys that were, you know, crafting things with their own hands and imaginations and whatnot. So I always took a liking to it. So, you know, I was in the software business for 23 years, and it was pretty stressful jobs and, you know, long commutes and all that. So what I'd do is when I came home, I would turn wood, and I really didn't have interest in furniture, cabinets, or anything like that. So I was like, well, my passion is hunting and duck hunting. So I'm going to try to make some duck calls. And this is probably almost 25 years ago. And so I just started turning barrels, and I'd put an echo, you know, insert in there. And then I was like, I'm going to try to make my own insert. And that's where things get tough with duck calls. You know, anybody can turn a barrel, but it's the insert that, that makes, you know, makes the duck call, and doing it consistently and, and, you know, having the exact same product come from, you know, each time that you make it is also, there's an art to that. But so the way I learned how to make duck calls was by breaking thousands of them. So I've always been, you know, I've always been a kid who reversed engineers everything. Like, if you give me a number, you know, bench 500 pounds or whatever, I'll reverse engineer that like super quick in my head and break it down to what I have to do, you know, each hour of each day to get to that 500 pounds in X amount of time. And so, you know, when I was a kid, if I got a remote control car, I'd play with it for about 2 hours, then I'd tear it all down. I mean, I'd tear the motherboard apart, I'd tear the wheels off, everything I could take off, I would, and then I'd rebuild it. And I think the reason I did that was to learn how the things work. You know, I did that to my bikes, anything I had that I can take apart, I'd do that and put it back together, take it apart, put it back together. I don't know, maybe I'm Rain Man or something, or autistic, I don't know. But I don't know, I'm very interested on how things work, right? And so every duck call I got from the time I was 10 years old, I would take apart, I would sand it, you know, the tone board, I'd break it. And then I would cut the reeds shorter, try to get longer reeds. I'd start dog earing them, and it's all cause and effect, right? If I dog ear it, that's the, you know, I'm cutting the dog ears, and the effect of that is X, right? And so I'm always playing around with things. I broke so many calls and still didn't have it figured out. Like, how does a duck call really work? And like, how do you make minor changes and get different notes? And so it was, you know, a lot of breaking calls, and until you kind of start to learn, okay, this is how the call operates. This, what if you move this, this is what happens. If you do this, this is what happens. And then that's when we've got to a point where I made our Drakeslayer tone board. And, you know, I was just doing it as a hobby. Oh, what, almost 11 years ago. And buddies were like, man, this call rips, dude. Like, you should sell it. And I was like, oh, I'll just sell them to people that want them. And then finally I kind of was done with the software industry and business. I was like, you know what? I'm done. And a good friend of mine, he's like, let's take Slayer to the next level. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do that. You know, it's a hobby. And he's like, dude, the call rips. The name's awesome. Let's do it. So I was like, all right, let's do it. And that was probably about almost 4 or 5 years ago.
So. Hmm. So it took you almost 20 years to be like, this is what I want to do. This is, you know, what you think will make you successful.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a passion of mine. Like, you know, I played college football, and, you know, my entire life I was focused on, you know, trying to be a professional baseball player or football player.
Yeah.
When that was over, I was like, okay, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
I looked at a lot of outdoor stuff, and the pay wasn't there. I was like, I ended up just kind of falling in the software industry for 22 years. And that really was, you know, I just did it. It was good money, and, you know, I just did it. But my passion was always outdoors, hunting, fishing, anything I could do outdoors that related to that. And so when I got home at night, that's all, you know, actually, that's all I thought about all day on my drive home. And at home was, you know, what's the weather doing? What direction's the wind coming in from? Where am I going to hunt? Right. And just planning your weekend. And so I was a weekend warrior, just dreaming about it all week. And then finally, I was just like, you know what? I'm going full time. So it's the best thing I ever did. This is like talking to folks like you, talking to folks in the industry, people who have the same love and passion for this sport. I could talk about it all day long. And it's, to me, you know, building quality products that people could be successful with and help them be successful so they have a better time out there doing it, the things that we love. I couldn't think of anything else I'd want to be doing right now.
For sure. Yeah. So that first call, was that all handmade and hand tuned at the beginning? No, did you use any machinery?
No, that first tone board, I used a jig, and then, you know, kind of tailored that call based on a jig that I was using. And then, Yeah, and then just kind of slowly started altering the things. Made a second jig. That was a little different, and then went from there.
Okay. Now you're pretty automated with CNC and all that. Looks like you're cranking them out pretty good that way.
Definitely. Everything's on CNC machines now. And, to get things to replicate exactly the same, the machines we're using, they build aeronautic parts, medical devices and things like that. So they have to be
Right.
accurate. They have to be, just dead on accurate. So, to get that replication and that, so everything looks exactly the same, sounds exactly the same. And even our tone boards, we have to tune when they come off the machine because they're just
Sure.
not there. So every call I have myself or two other guys, we tune these calls to make sure that they're right.
Okay. How many different waterfowl calls are you making nowadays?
Oh gosh, we got the Drake Slayer. Which is kind of a timber call. It doesn't take a lot of air. We've got the Ranger, which takes a ton of air. It's a loud, aggressive kind of open water call. Then we got what's new this that we came out with this last year, the Dewbar, that's ducked up beyond any repair, and that's the one with the duck, tongue in it with lacerated reed and tone board. Then we got the Pearly Gates cut down, and then we got the Dewalt cut down.
Okay.
Yep. And then we will be coming out with a new call this coming year that I'm pretty excited about.
So what's the materials? Does it change across the different calls and different levels, or what are you guys using for those?
So it's 100% acrylic, both the insert and the barrel for the Drake Slayer and the Ranger, the Pearly Gates. And then we have Delrin, which is for the Reaper, which is a double reed call. And then we got Delrin for the double aught cut down. And so it's a less expensive material, so we're able to reduce the price on them quite a bit.
Okay.
Still good calls. They're just trying to meet a price range for somebody who doesn't want to spend $135 on a call.
Sure. So for some of our new listeners to getting into waterfowl, can you give us a quick synopsis of kind of what the difference between a single reed and a double reed call is, and what differences they sound they make?
Oh man, it's a question a lot of people ask when we, at shows, and it's like, so what's the difference, and which one should I use? And I just think, who uses a single reed and a double reed, it all depends on how you present air to the call. There's some people that tend to sound better on a single reed, and some people that sound better on a double reed. So I think, if anybody's out there and they're wondering, they should try to. Each of them to see which one they sound better on. The way I see it, is that, double reed's more forgiving. You have that top reed, so you don't pin the, less likely to pin the reed. It could sound more raspy with voice, but for me, it's more of a forgiving call that you don't have to focus so much on what you're doing with that reed and how high you're getting it and whatnot. So the single reed, it's to me is more like a race car, because you don't have that top reed hindering you. You can really peg it out and take it to its limits. So you're gonna have a wider range of sound from a single reed. You'll be able to get lower and raspier, and you'll be able to get higher and louder with a single reed, just because you don't have that second reed kind of hindering the performance of that the reed that's making the noise off the soundboard.
Okay, so for anyone who doesn't know and just goes to the store and grabs a random call on the shelf and don't even know what it is, like how would you tell somebody to pick a call, like whether they should pick a single weed, a single reed, a double, a cut down?
I always say if you're gonna, start with a call, start with a double reed, call, J-frame call. Cut downs are super, in my opinion, pretty hard to learn on and buy, or to start, to buy one and start using it right away. I would stick with a double reed, single reed type call, J-frame call to start with. And then what to look for, quality is one thing. If you're looking at these products that have been made in China or overseas, it's probably not going to last you a long time. You know, if you don't care about that, then those calls, you know, they do make some duck sounds, but the quality of the sound they make just isn't as rich and true to a real duck. And I think calling and sounding true to the sounds that the ducks make, or elk or anything, makes a huge difference. And so buying a quality call, there's a lot of quality calls out there. Slayer's not the only one, but you know, typically it's got to be over about $100 to be quality, just because people are putting a lot of time into the materials that they're getting. They're spending money on machines that do it very accurately. So you know the call that they're intending to sell is the one that you're actually getting. So I would kind of lean on that, but you know, I think trying calls is the thing that you should do if you can. You got buddies that have calls, or you go down to Cabela's or whatever and try those out. But everybody presents air differently, and it's all, every call, like the call, the way I sound on my call will sound different than the guy next to me who's doing it. Both may sound good, but it's just going to be different because we all present air differently to the calls. So it's a really tough question to answer, because, you know, and then it's like, if somebody has no idea how to blow a duck call and they're blowing it kind of like a whistle without diaphragm air and whatnot, no call is going to sound good. So it's like, okay, well, which one do I buy? Right. And so until you get to a stage where you can actually, you know what the call is supposed to sound like, it's hard to direct somebody to that. You know, that's why we sell that Drake Slayer double reed, the Susie Slayer, which is a Drake Slayer insert, or the Reaper. And I think that call, I think in 2022, we got top call in Field and Stream, and it was because the call is so true to sound and is so easy to use. Mm. And then what we've done there is, you know, we've just constricted down the exhaust, and so the call doesn't take a ton of air to blow. It's got a lot of hold in it, and so you can, you know, it allows you to get that deeper ducky quack for beginners and whatnot. So it's a call I actually use hunting, because it's so easy to use. I don't have to think about it. I can focus on the ducks, the dog, and shooting.
Yeah, that sounds like a great option. So you mentioned the cheaper ones, especially stuff coming from overseas. What's kind of unique about your calls compared to everything else out there?
Oh, you know, it's Ford, Dodge, right? Chevy. Each one has its little differences, you know, and I think in ours is quality. You know, that same quality that, you know, my uncle, my grandfather had with their shoes and their furniture. You know, I truly believe in that. I believe in building something that'll last a lifetime. I don't think there's a lot of stuff around these days that you buy with the expectation of having for the rest of your life. You know, I'd love for our calls to get handed down to their sons and grandsons and whatnot. And, you know, I've got some old calls laying around here that have been handed down, and it's pretty cool. You know, it's probably not cool to anybody that doesn't duck hunt, but for us, you know, guns and knives and duck calls that you can keep, you know, handing down and seeing that being used in such a great sport is pretty cool to me. So we've spent a lot of time on quality, and we take sound very serious. You know, we're not a competition duck call company, but we try to make calls that you can be very true to a real duck's, you know, sound out in the out hunting, and then, you know, be successful at the end of the day and have fun with it. So, you know, our calls, would I say they're the best calls on the market? Of course, I would say that because I'm making them right. But there's a lot of good duck call companies out there that make great calls. And it's just, again, you know, I believe I've made these calls that they're easier for people to blow and sound good with. And that's how I designed them, I think. A lot of calls have been made for the competition floor where you want to do a lot of fancy and crazy stuff, which is cool. But, you know, I don't think those calls are kind of like a race car, right? You really have to present the air correctly to them to get them to sound good.
So, you
know, our Ranger call and is kind of that way. Like, you got to put a lot of air into it. And, you know, we built it for somebody who wants to put a lot of air into it and get, you know, and really get loud and do some of those things that, folks are looking to do.
Right. So I don't know if you know anybody like this, but, you know, some people, they get done with duck season and they're done for all year. You know what I mean? They're not getting ready. They're not practicing or nothing. I'm guilty of it sometimes, you know, for like a month or so. I'm like, I need to blow on these calls so I don't get rusty, but, you know, just get caught up in life and stuff. So do you have any like key points for maximizing your practice sessions, you know, like off season, on season?
Yeah, I mean, you should carry a duck call in your car. I don't know, you know, if you drive at all, I mean, there's a duck call in your car. There should be a duck call in your office, you know, drawer. I've got five sitting here. And I just come in the morning, I just start blowing it. And, you know, my wife, she's just numb to it at this point. You know, my dogs, they just look at me like, oh my God. But, you know, I got the luxury of tuning calls, you know, couple hours every day, and so I'm blowing them a lot. But, you know, back in the day, I've always had one in just about every spot I was. You know, I even put one in my elk hunting box, you know, just so when I'm up there, I'll start blowing a call around a campfire or something. But, you know, it's just, you just got to put it in the, I'm a creature of habit, so I just got to make a routine of anything, and I can get in that habit of doing it. But practicing, you know, and that's another thing, is people don't realize the reeds and duck calls do wear out. So depending on how much you blew that the prior year, and I always never understood that either when I was, you know, younger and not in this business. But now that I'm blowing certain calls a lot, I notice that the reeds, and then when I get reed calls back, you know, they've been out for a couple of years, I notice the difference in a new reed versus a used reed. So I would definitely give your call a tune up. You know, reeds are super inexpensive. I think we charge like $1.50 or something for them. But it's a good little tune up. And it's one of those deals, the sound quality falls off so slow over a period of a long time that you just don't notice it. You get used to it.
How often do you recommend somebody sends that back in?
Oh, you know, like a duck call, you shouldn't have to send it back in. You could, you know, putting in the reeds is fairly simple. I think on our website and other websites, they show you, you know, exactly how to do it.
If you
don't know, but I would say once a year, you know, and if you're blowing, you know, if you're blowing it a lot once a year, if you're not, you know, the main duck caller, you're only going 10, 15 times a year, then you could probably do it once every 2 years.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a good tip. Always having your calls handy somewhere where you can get on them every chance you get.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. And then I got buddies who come over and, you know, we'll sit out in the shop and you know, they might learn something new on a duck call. And so they'll showing us, or I'm doing something. And, you know, it's just, I don't know. You know, you also hang out with people that have the same desires or passions. And then somehow duck calls get, you know, you're like, oh, dude, you got a duck call in your pocket. Give me that thing. Let me see what it sounds like.
So. Oh, yeah. So how about while hunting, what are kind of some of the maybe top three things you see people doing wrong that they should be changing up while they're out in the blind?
Oh, gosh. I would say hide, number one. You know, it's you don't realize, like, if you put a drone up, you know, 50 feet, you know, above you, and look down, and you'd be surprised what the ducks are seeing versus what we think they're seeing. You know, everybody focuses on building up their blind on their fronts and backs. But you have to have something over your top, you know, so they're not looking down in that hole. Early birds, you know, the birds that haven't been shot at a lot, not a big deal, you know, but once they get shot at a few times from that dark hole with little heads sticking out, they get pretty weary of it fast. So I see that as something I would, you know, if I had to coach somebody up on. Now, you know, I've been doing this for 42 years. I don't claim to be an expert. I just know what works for me. And so I'm just giving my 2 cents in there. But, yeah. You know, and then maybe secondly, you know, set up. I see a lot of guys set up incorrectly, you know, with the wind, you know, coming into their face. Or it's even they're on a side wind, but they don't have an area for the birds to land that they're going to feel comfortable with. So I think setting up with the wind and terrain correctly is probably number two. And then, you know, maybe three is overcalling. A little old school, you know, call only when you need to type of guy. But I, you know, I don't think people, they put a lot of worth in sounding good on call and doing a lot of bouncing hands and Cajun's quills and hell calls. And so they take that duck hunting as an opportunity to show everybody their skills versus right. And it's awesome, right? Like, we love doing that, but I think reading birds and calling at the right time in the right way is critical. And when you start to have that communication with the birds, it's actually a lot of fun when you're watching how the birds are reacting to how you're calling. And so to me, that's overlooked sometimes. Like, there's a purpose and a reason why you're calling, and the birds will tell you kind of what to do. So I think, you know, at first people just think, oh, I'll just blow this thing as loud and as often as I can, and it's just going to bring them right in here. So
you've been doing the call making for, you said, 5 years, right?
We've been selling them for about 10 years.
Kind of,
we got serious about it 5 years ago.
So when you got serious about it and you're like, all right, this is definitely what I want to do, I'm going to do this full time. What did it do for you, like, personally, family, or anything? You know what I mean? Like, how did it change your guys' lives, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever started a small business before, but it's a lot of work. You know, you wear a lot of hats. So, you know, I look at the last 5 years, I've been as busy as I've ever been, you know. I've managed some pretty big sales teams and software, and was responsible for a really, really big quotas, you know, in that $20 to $30 million range. And I wasn't half as busy then as I am now. So I would say busy. You know, we're a small, you know, family business. You know, Jen Hetherington, who's our COO, you know, I worked with her at a software company. So I feel like she's like a sister to me now. We've been working together for so long, and, you know, she's fully vested in making this thing work, and she's been awesome. You know, my wife does some stuff for us. My daughter does some stuff for us, and some close friends that we brought onto the team. So it's a very small, you know, small family type business. You know, then we got Lisa, who does our graphic design, everything Slayer, and, you know, and she's awesome. She's, you know, I consider her family. So, so it's very tight knit, you know. So, you know, to answer your question, it's like, it's kind of brought the family closer, right? And friends closer. And so that's been a really cool experience, because when you're a small business, I mean, everybody's wearing a lot of hats, and everybody has to have a lot of passion and care for it to make it work, because everybody's working so hard.
Right. Yeah, man, that's awesome. You know, that's great when you have everyone that wants to, you know, make it into something huge. It sucks when, you know, you got this guy that, you know, he's like, yeah, you know what I mean? So that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's been fun. And again, you know, our main purpose is to take care of our customers, to make sure that we're giving them a product they can be successful with. We have 100% guarantee return policy for any reason. And that's because, and the reason I wanted to do that, Jen and I talked about it, and the reason why we wanted to do it was, you know, I bought so many duck calls that sounded good when somebody else blew, and then I would get it and I was like, I can't make this call work. Like, it's just not right. So, you know, in today's day where you don't get to test everything, you know, and it's online, right? So you order a call, and if somebody's not happy with the call, we'll return and refund their money 100%. So I don't want a 14-year-old kid who got a bunch of Christmas money and, you know, he's wavering, do I buy some, you know, some hunting boots, or do I get a duck call? And he buys a duck call and he gets it, and he doesn't like it. Like, I'd hate to stick that kid with something like that. So we don't get very many returns, but we're willing to do that, make sure everybody's happy.
That's awesome. So in these past 5, 10 years, whatever, as long as you had the business, do you have any favorite moments working with any big name hunters, any big name brands?
Oh gosh. It all depends on what you mean is big named, but you know, we work with Butch over at Cryptech, who's just down the road. So they're a pretty big, you know, very big, probably top three camouflage company out there. But no, I mean, I've got to go up to Canada and hunt with some of our influencer guides up there. And that's been a ton of fun. And just meeting people here locally, you know, elk hunting and duck hunting with them, it's kind of opened up doors where folks will be like, hey, I want to come by, check out the shop and blow some calls. And that. And then, you know, obviously we get, where do you hunt? Oh, I hunt here. Like, okay, I'll take you up. And, you know, I end up getting invites out on other stuff. And so I just got to meet some really cool folks, just down to earth people here locally, and starting to, you know, quite a bit across the country. You know, folks, just random folks that just love our product, love our company, and they're like, hey, I got some great whitetail hunting here in Ohio, you want to come out and hunt anytime? You know, and starting to really meet, just, you know, I'm interested in meeting those folks who have hunting and fishing and the outdoors just ingrained in their blood, man. And so, like, that's what I was like, it depends on what you describe as a big name, but, you know, those are the people I'm interested in that just love it, right? And I've got a guy from Michigan, a kid from Michigan. I got guys calling me because, you know, they're new to it, and I'm like, I'm kind of a sucker because I really want people to be successful out there, and so they're calling me like through duck season, like, hey, I went out and this happened. What should I do? You know, and just. But you could tell, like, they're just like, they're so fired up to be out there doing it. They're loving it. Like, they're just like, dude, this is the best thing ever. They're going out and killing 2 or 3 ducks, and they're like, thought they'd have the best day of their lives,
right? For sure.
And so, like, those guys, like those kids, and they were, you know, he's not even a kid, he's like 30 years old just getting into it, but those are the people I really enjoy talking to and meeting. You know, that, you know, like, we get up at 2:30, 3 in the morning, we drive an hour and a half. You know, we're, you know, last year it was snowing, I'm sliding down the freeway with my boat, we get out there, it's blizzard conditions, like minus 10, you know, and we're, you know, the water's frozen up in my engine, so we're sitting there freezing, trying to, in the dark, trying to get that working, right? And then you finally make it where you're going, and you set up, and you have just a kick-ass day. There's not too many people that would do that day in and day out the entire duck season for 40, 50. Right. And the guys I grew up with, those old Italians out there in Sherman Lake and out where I used to hunt Big Break and all those spots. I mean, these are old time generational guys who've been hunting out there for the last 100 years. They hunt 80 days, you know, they fish in the wintertime, the fishing shuts down up in Alaska, they come home, they duck hunt, you know, 80 days straight. And then they're just, you know, just doing it. And they've done it for years. And so those are the type of people that I really enjoy hunting with and being around. And, you know, like even my dog, like, I couldn't imagine having a dog that didn't have the same passion, right? Like just even the dog I have are like, they think about is duck hunting. And, you know, you guys all probably hunting with dogs like that. I mean, they're just focused, they're tuned in. They love it more than you do. And it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's very well said. I've been in the outdoor media space for the last 20 years. And the people, like you mentioned, that are just ate up with it, that's the best part of it. That's the best part of doing the expos and the best part of traveling and your business of selling calls and meeting people. It's that makes all the hard work and all the sacrifice worth it for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's there's not too many people like us as duck hunters. It's a sickness. People are always like, that don't do it or don't know about it. They're like, what are you doing? What time are you leaving? Why today? And why do you have to be out there at dark? Like, they're like, what's wrong with you? And they're just like, well, what's wrong with you? My question.
No question. So I noticed you guys have some calling classes called Call the Wild. Could you get into that, tell us a little bit about that and how folks can sign up for that.
Yeah, if you just go to our website and go to Call the Wild, you could, you know, on any phone app, you can download it. And what we did there is, you know, there's a lot of information out there on, you know, you can go online and find anything on YouTube about, you know, how to do a balancing hen, how to do Cajun squirrel, you know, how to do a hail call or a comeback call. But it's nothing that's formatted real well, and it gives you a progression to be successful. You know, I see a lot of, you know, my nephew who grew up watching him trying to call and watching all that YouTube stuff. And, you know, before he even knows how to quack, he's coming to me like, how do you do that bouncing hen thing? Like, and then he's trying to do that. I'm like, well, you don't even know how to do a quack yet. Like, you can't start there, but it's so tempting when you see all this cool sounding calls. And so you kind of want to start there versus, it's almost like going and saying, okay, I want to play baseball. And then you go try to hit 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And then somebody changes up with 85-mile-an-hour like hook, right? And it's like, okay, like you're not going to be successful. You have to hit off the tee first, right? You got to learn how to hold the bat. You got to learn how to hit off a tee, then some, you know, soft toss, then some pitching, right? And then you progress to 50 miles an hour. So then you progress as, you know, over the years. And so what we want to do is build something from start to finish that, again, just helps people be more successful, right? If you're going to spend the time trying to learn this stuff, like try to do it in a fashion that you're going to be most successful at. So we start with, you know, the anatomy of a duck call. How do you hold the duck call? How do you put a duck call to your mouth? You know, and a lot of people will already know that, so they can progress forward. But then it's like, how do you make a quack? And then, you know, an exercise after that. So make sure you can do a quack without thinking about it before you move on to three blind mice. And then the three blind mice, right? Just getting the different three tones of a duck call, learning that, and don't move on until you've completely mastered it. And then it just keeps progressing you to come, you know, a comeback call, to a greeting call, to a hell call, to, you know, Cajun squill, to a bouncing hand, to a feed call, and then into, you know, like a refuge feed and things like that. So I think there's 16 series. They're like 5-6 minutes long, and then each one has an exercise after. And so we believe if you follow that step by step, that you'll become a good duck caller in a shorter period of time. And, you know, again, you know, somebody's not going to go through that, be an expert caller at the end of it, but it'll give them the right mechanics, you know, how to present air, you know, how to place your tongue, and how everything operates mechanically, so that you have the best odds of being good in a shorter amount of time.
And, yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. You know? Everybody knows they got to build the foundation, but like you said, if you're not building the foundation in the right order, you're kind of wasting your time and putting yourself further behind.
And I've even created bad habits, right? Like in my golf swing, right? I've got some bad habits from baseball that I just, you know, it's hard to fix. And then even my duck calling, you know, when I feed call, I'm dugga, 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 dugga. And I've done that my entire life since I was 10 years old. And I'm like really good at dugga, 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 dugga. But, you know, trying to change it up, right? My tongue just doesn't move that way anymore because I built that muscle memory. And I just, it's so hard for me to move over to that different way of doing a feed call. And so that, you know, that's a point, you know, right? Like you can develop bad habits and they're so hard to get out of.
For sure.
And I know another guy that he came up at the show. He learned how to bounce his call. And so he started bouncing and never did anything else. And now he can't not bounce his call.
Hmm.
It's kind of funny. I'm like, well, don't do that. Just do a normal quack. And he's like, I don't know how to do that. Right. So he's just created that habit.
Right.
Bouncing. Really.
Hmm. Well, Bill, we sure appreciate your time. I've got a set of rapid fire questions for you before we let you go.
All right.
If you're ready.
Yeah. Why not?
All right. What's your favorite waterfowl?
Favorite waterfowl? It would probably be shooting greenheads.
Okay. Good choice.
I've got some buddies here that love the blue wing spoonbill. He calls it the blue wing shoveler. So he tries to make it sound fancy. I'm like, dude, how can you like shooting shovelers over greenheads? We always get in arguments out there. So.
Nice. What's your favorite waterfowl recipe?
Waterfowl recipe. It's simple. It's keep the skin on, right? Breast them, keep the skin on, and garlic, salt, and pepper, and throw some olive oil in the skillet, and about 5 minutes, 4 minutes on each side. It's got to be rare, not medium rare, but rare. We get a nice brown glaze on both sides, and I usually do a like a sweet sauce. I'll reduce some blueberries or cranberries or something like that, and put that over the top, put that on top of some white rice with some veggies, and I'm good to go.
Love it. Sounds good.
Yep.
What's your favorite shotgun?
Oh, it's a Benelli. I shoot a Benelli Montefeltro. You know, I shot a, it's funny, when I was 10, my uncle bought me a Remington 870. I shot that up until about 4 years ago. And that thing has never failed me. So if I had to say favorite gun, just because the reliability, the quality, you know, it's not a fancy gun, but it shoots straight and it kills. I would say an 870, but, you know, now that I have that Benelli Montefeltro and I'm half Sicilian, so I have to go with the Benelli.
Good choice.
Yeah.
Do you prefer hunting lakes, swamps, or rivers?
Oh, I like big rivers. You know, I grew up on the Delta. Sacramento, San Joaquin rivers kind of came together right there. And just, I like that big water, river, moving water type stuff.
How many decoys do you use on an average hunt?
Oh, it depends. Early season, I might do 2 dozen or 3 dozen. Most of the time I'll do 2 dozen, but depending on what I'm seeing out there, you know, if I'm on the river, if I'm in the field, you know, it depends on how big the feed is, you know, I'll go anywhere from 2 dozen to 7 dozen, right? Just depending on how many birds they're used to seeing in there. Late season, not so much in the field, but on the river, I'll reduce down to 12.
Excellent. If you could go by boat, kayak, or walk-in, what do you prefer to do?
Boat. I've done a lot of kayaking. We had an area that used to flood in the Sacramento Valley, and the duck hunting was just insane. But the only thing you can get down there was a kayak, and that got pretty sketchy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I know about sketchy.
I like big, wide transom boat.
Yeah.
Comfortable, fast, yeah.
After this past season, I don't think I'm going to touch a kayak ever again.
It wasn't that bad. Come on.
Oh, dude, it was bad.
And the last one, of all the places that you've waterfowl hunted, what's your favorite?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one. I mean, I got to say, Idaho's been great. The Delta was great too. You know, I just grew up with it. That's where I fell in love with it. Just the, you know, the way the birds work up there. But here, I mean, it's unbelievable too. You know, some of the flocks of mallards that we get and how they come in. But I would have to put those two up there. Canada was awesome. But you know, it's a different deal up there, just how it's done and the type of shooting and stuff. But yeah, I'd have to say the Delta or out here.
Excellent. So I'll give you a chance to let everybody know where they can find you. I know you're on all the socials and got a website. If you want to let all of our listeners know where they can check out your calls.
Yeah, no problem. We're at slayercalls.com. You can find us there. Our website's pretty easy to navigate and get through there, but I really appreciate you guys having me on today, this Sunday evening, and it's always great to talk duck hunting. And if you guys have any questions or anybody else out there has questions, you know, you can always email info@slayercalls.com, and one of us three will pick it up and get back to you. And if you ever guys want to call me and talk to me, anybody, I don't care who wants to talk duck hunting or calls, my phone's always open for conversations. So,
well, we appreciate that, Bill. Appreciate your time, and thanks again for coming on the podcast.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you all so much for taking time out of your day to tune in. We really appreciate it. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Migration Waterfowl. We also have a Facebook group for the podcast. Please join us there as well. And if you could, please check out our YouTube channel and subscribe while you are there. We've got lots of great content coming that way throughout the rest of the year. And be sure to join us every Monday for a bonus Migration Monday video podcast. You can find links to our store on our Facebook and Instagram pages. Check out our shirts, hoodies, hats, thermoses, and coffee over there. And now through the end of May, 10% of everything we sell will go to Ducks Unlimited. If you like what you've heard here, please take a moment and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. That really helps us out, everybody. That is one of the few things that you can do in addition to sharing this podcast with your friends that will really help us continue to be able to bring you some great and free content. So get out there and enjoy the outdoors, but make sure you seek out a relationship with the one who created everything. Romans chapter 15, verse 13 says, "May the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that by the power of the Holy Spirit, you may abound in hope." And remember, the migration is coming. Be ready when it arrives. Tune in next week to hear another great guest on the Migration Waterfowl Podcast.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.